Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with James Lee Burke about his new book, Don't Forget Me, Little Bessie. New York Times bestselling and award-winning James Lee Burke is one of America's most distinguished crime writers. His books are set in places now familiar to his readers, South Texas and Louisiana, featuring folks that reappear like old friends, most notably the Robichauds in Louisiana and the Hollins in Texas. His newest book, just out, is Don't Forget Me, Little Bessie, and the Bessie of the title is Bessie Holland, daughter of Hackberry Holland, a legendary Texas Ranger. We're speaking to Jim today about the new book from his home in Montana. Jim Burke, hello. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, the last time we spoke, you had just finished this book, and you said you thought it was your best book yet. So what is it about this book that's so special to you?
Well, I've written quite a few books,
yes,
but not one that had a narrator who was a lady, or in this case, a young girl.
14 when we meet
her. Yeah, yeah.
Was that hard for you, or was it fun?
Yeah, it wasn't hard at all. It's just, I've always felt that writing is done by someone else. It sits in another hand. I'm not putting myself in the same level of William Faulkner and Ernest Hemingway, but they both said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Before Faulkner passed away, or, you know, he was in an accident with a horse. But he said, had I not written the words, they would have been written by another hand.
Mm-hmm.
And Hemingway said that about The Old Man in the Sea, and he said, I reread the book, and it was like someone else wrote it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, the best writers always say that writing is like grace, that it kind of passes through you.
Yeah, that's it.
You know?
That's it.
Well, this is the story of Bessie Holland, the daughter of Hackberry Holland, who's the patriarch of the Holland family. So tell us about the Hollins and how they're tangled up with your family in Texas.
Well, that's it. They're tangled up. That's us. Alifair Holland was my grandmother. And my mother was, her name was Benbo, but she was a Holland. And they were a very unusual people. They were frontiers, but they were people who just had it's like striking a bell with a sword. It's just, it came right out of medieval times in the best way. It's like being part of the court, the Arthurian court. Golly, in the 5th century. That's us. Anyway, so my mother was one of those people.
So what about Bessie?
That character has been in about 10 or 12 of my books, but she wasn't a prominent one. Well, strongly there, but she was not certainly a narrator. But this one is. She sees the world in a scarred way and is frightened by the coming century, which is the 20th century, and it is the most violent in our history.
Well, she's 14 years old. She's on the cusp of everything in that small Texas town, because it's a place that's changing right in front of her, and a microcosm of everything that's kind of going wrong in the whole country, don't you think?
That is the key to art. Artist of any kind sees a piece of sand, but that sand is not the thing he will write. He will make the beach, you know, the sea, the ocean, you know, infinity. That's what every artist eventually does. He puts his hand in eternity. He puts it right into it. And that's what metaphysics are. To me, I cannot understand that with my brethren, that 8 billion people out there, literally. How many are interested in any of this? Like the Milky Way? How did it get here? What's going on Mars these days? Jeez.
Well, it only takes
now,
a few.
What do we have? TV. where is my phone?
One of the things that goes wrong in this town, this little town, is the arrival of Atlas Oil. And oil has been one of the great landscape changers of our era. And you've written a lot about that.
Well, it's just the South. It's the geographic part of the story. My father was a petroleum engineer, as well as other things, but my mother worked 40 years for a driller, and I couldn't have gone to school without working for oil companies, and the Sinclair Company put me through school.
Weren't you a landman for them?
Yeah, that's it. I was a landman when I was 20 years old. I really didn't have them in mind. What I did have mind is just what happened right in that place. And it was all over West Texas and South Texas. And in effect, they just tore the environment up. It was literally, derricks were built side by side. The spars got stepped on each other. Do you remember Giant?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That great film. And you see those photos or those shots where they're just miles and miles of derricks. And that's what they did. And they, of course, they ruined the environment. But in other words, the system is more dire than it is at any time right now. We're looking at the loss of our Arctic caps,
mm-hmm.
and you can't undo those things.
Well, you know, when I was growing up in Texas City, because Texas City was all, you know, Texas City, it was all
sure.
oil refinery.
Yeah, yeah.
And we lived in one of the little suburbs there, and one of our neighbors was this much older man who had been there when they discovered Spindletop.
Yeah.
You would have thought he'd be proud of that, but he looked shell-shocked every time he mentioned it or anybody mentioned it, like he'd seen something he wished he hadn't seen.
The man who drilled that
yep.
particular well?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. It's kind of like all the men, you know, who, of course, created the atom bomb.
Oh, Oppenheimer, right.
Oh, yeah. Same kind of thing, huh?
Yeah. Made you know it wasn't a good thing. If you're just joining us, my guest is James Lee Burke, whose new book in the Holland series of novels is Don't Forget Me, Little Bessie. One of the things that strikes me about this book is how the background is this parade of American violence. You know, the Civil War is barely in the rearview mirror.
Uh-huh.
The Great War is looming up ahead. And more awaits Bessie after that. It's like you put everything you know or have almost written about in this book somewhere.
Yeah, but this is it. It happened there.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you brought that up because there was a reviewer. He was nice to me, but he said there were all these things that happen here, like they were, I used a brush and swept them up and tidied them in, you know.
But they're very deliberate, my God.
Those things happen in there, and yeah. I know the people who did it. They're wrong. I've heard people just say, well, not many, but in fact, maybe nobody, because they were there, and I can't give their names, but I know them, and I know them up close and personal.
Yeah. See, but it's the encyclopedic nature of it. It's awesome.
That's it. One of my best books is one that not as many people have read than this particular one, namely Wayfaring Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's one of my three best books.
Yeah.
But it deals with World War II and the aftermath of it. The man I dedicated it to and whom I wrote about was my first cousin, mm-hmm. and he was the war hero. He came home with a Silver Star and three Purple Hearts, and he lost a lung. And he was at Buchenwald, one of the really awful ones, and he would never talk about it. And that it just, when he came home, he was terribly bitter, but he was such a grand, fine man. He died a few years ago, but there he was.
Now, on the other hand, besides the Greatest Generation and the people who did the good things are the people who made use of our economy to do not such great things. And you represent those folks as well. When Bessie goes to New York to be with her brother, she falls in with a very young Benny Siegel and Meyer Lansky.
Yep.
So talk about those sorts of people in our American history.
They're larger than life. And we're talking about up and personal. That's it. I can't say anything else.
But it does show you that crime is close to all of us. I mean, it's just a matter of chance.
No, but it was what it was at the time. Why, it's like the characters that we hear in this book who were at the Alamo, or they went with Teddy Roosevelt down to Cuba. You can go on and on, Wild Bill Hickok, you know, in Kansas, and all the figures. Those kinds of people were just simply maybe an image for all the rest of us, because people, the manifest destiny, began to believe in it. They turned it into a religious cause, and it became genocidal. It's that easy. It's not an exaggeration that we destroyed 50 million bison on the plains. In 1830, there were around 50 bison. In 50 years later, only 200 head were left. It was Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, who in 1892 saved that herd, or they wouldn't be there at all, you see. But worse, this was done to starve the Indians. And one of those guys was William
Sherman.
That's what it was. He was an advocate for destroying the food for the Indians. All of them did. It was the Union companies, people who... I'm not advocating for slavery. What I'm saying is that the war for the Civil War was a war that was not really about the South, most of it. It was not about the South. It was about making this whole country a union, but behind the union were the great titans who built the railroads, and we make these guys saints today. They weren't saints, they were thieves.
I think what has the great appeal for you in so many ways is the story of the Great West.
Yes, it is. And the West means following the sun. That's mm-hmm. what it is. The sun follows the West, and I mean geographically, and that's what we have done.
If you're just joining us, my guest is James Lee Burke, whose new book in the Holland series of novels is Don't Forget Me, Little Bessie. Why was it important to you to have a young girl tell the story this time around? There's so many times somebody says to her, this is America, and she goes, it's not, but I'm a girl, you know, it's not my America, it's a man's America. And she said, it's not Miss Ida's America.
She's pure, that's the point. She sees truth. I mean, there's a radiance from her. That's it. It's that thing that some people have. They glow. And you know it. You don't have to ask if they're go to church. You know it. They're there already. They're walking in their own chapel, and she's one of those. And she cannot tolerate a lie, and she cannot tolerate the exposition and the cruelty that she sees around her, and especially the destruction of the world. Just in effect, that she knows what's coming. She sees what those soldiers are like when they come back from France. The boys that went away and thought they would have a glorious experience, and they swallow yellow gas. And
I love that story of the girl from her town that she hears from the candle maker, and she said, the little girl from our town was never afraid and never judgmental, as though she saw actors around her no one else saw. But what her story really taught me was not to become a spectator in my own life.
That's a pretty good paragraph.
Yeah, it is.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's it. But that's it. She's a witness to history.
She's kind of your Miss Jane Pittman, don't you think? She lives to be 102.
My mother was 2 months shy of 102.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the things at the end of this book is that, you know, I imagine Texans and Houstonians read your book in the way that Louisianians read the Robichaux books, you know? And to be at the Shamrock Hotel with Bessie.
Yeah.
Everybody from Houston knows that hotel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just such a perfect thing, and then you take it all home to your actual home.
Yeah, yeah.
You put Bessie in that house.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. But again, you know, it's fiction, that even if an author tries to create a character that accurately, and the characters take on their own wishes, and they get mad. They don't like to hear themselves saying something or thinking something. But I never know where the stories come from. I cannot remember most of them. That's always been the way. That's always been the way. I don't remember the story, and it's like someone else wrote them. It's always in the dreams. I have dreams about 4 o'clock in the morning. But that's it. They're there. They're here. They're there.
Well,
yeah.
Did Mr. Slick come to you in a dream? He's one of the most puzzling characters in this book.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Slick's a great character. He's just one of my really, really fun guys. But he's a serious fellow, too, because he appears to be weak. But his weakness is that of the love that he has for these innocent people, such as the people of color and of Bessie. And he becomes his kind of medieval. That character hasn't been defined quite yet. Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that he's in love with what Bessie is, because she's not just a little girl. She represents humanity and everything that we admire in ourselves in the best way. And Bessie is a saint-like character, but then again, she's not a romantic one. I mean, she can be pretty angry.
She's got a good aim, too. Well, I don't know if it's your best book, but I sure did like it, Jim.
Well, thank you. I surely appreciate it.
Because she is the one person, that voice stays with you, that resolute quality. You can see her just making her way in the world.
Yeah, that's it. It's the, again, golly, I go back into stories that things that occurred, like my great-grandfather, that would be my mother's grandfather, was Sam Morgan Holland. And he was a drover, but, I mean, he had a huge cattle farm, ranch, but right after the Civil War. But he shot and killed 9 men. And he was a preacher and a drunkard and a Baptist.
A Baptist?
Preacher, yeah. And people said, well, at least they pay attention to his soliloquies, his sermons.
I bet they did. Oh, Jim. Oh, my God.
But anyway, those things happened. But it was during the period between 1866 and the turning of the century. But the war actually in Texas went on, but the other characters but it was all about first just land and then oil. And of course, the people that opened up the oil world opened up an adventure for people who could get rich, in the best way. I mean, they were really rough people, but mm-hmm. I was talking about just, say, roughnecks and pipeliners, but I always admired them. It's just like cowboys.
Right.
They trailed cows all up to Nebraska, and then finally even into Montana, you know. But they were adventurers, and I would give anything to go back in that time. If I could get back to about 1813 or 14, you know, going west, you know, good heavens, I would love to. I'd just love to do that.
Oh, I think you've taken us all back to those times. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, we've been talking with James Lee Burke, whose most recent novel is Don't Forget Me, Little Bessie. Jim, thank you so much. I admire this book so much.
Well, thanks a million, Susan. As always, you just have a great program, and I'm honored to be on it.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Illustrator Paul Karasik discusses and signs the graphic adaptation of award-winning novelist Paul Auster's The New York Trilogy. Thursday, July 10th at 6 at Octavia Books. Olivia Worley signs her new book, So Happy Together. Thursday, July 10th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Calvin Duncan and co-author Sophie Cull discuss their book, Jailhouse Lawyer, From Wrongful Conviction to Relentless Advocacy, a story of justice, hope, and unbreakable spirit. Thursday, July 10th at 6 at George's Auditorium, Dillard University. The Black Ink Monthly Writers Meetup takes place Saturday, July 12th at 2 at the East Bank Regional Library. Connect with local writers, level up your writing skills, and network. Constance Adler reads from and discusses Sight Unseen, July 17th at 5:30 at Author Night at Ladder Library. To celebrate the book and the current exhibition, Flower Hands, at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, the museum hosts a conversation with author E.M. Tran, whose book, Daughters of the New Year, is this year's One Book, One New Orleans selection. She'll appear with Megan Holt, Executive Director of One Book, One New Orleans, and Flower Hands co-curator Uyen Din. The event takes place at Ogden Museum Saturday, July 26th at 2. It's free, open to the community, but pre-register at the Ogden website. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org. Thank you.